The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If tales of ghostly hauntings, Bigfoot encounters, extraterrestrial interactions, and cosmic awakenings are your cup of tea, then join me, Eric Szilagyi, host of Uncomfortable Podcast, every Tuesday at 10 a.m., make Uncomfortable your home for the topics that reside on the fringe of our reality. Eyewitnesses, researchers, and experiencers join me on a weekly basis to delve into their paranormal and otherworldly experiences. Heard in over 65 countries worldwide, follow Uncomfortable Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your casts. Uncomfortable is now presented in video form on YouTube as well. So, as always, my friends, stay uncomfortable.
You are listening to Perplexity.
On November 5th, 1975, a 22-year-old logger named Travis Walton would have a life-changing encounter. He was working in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near Heber, Arizona. He was part of a 7-man logging crew. Travis was a very hard worker out of Snowflake, Arizona, and he had gotten along with his coworkers without any issue. It seemed like it was just another typical day for him. But when 6 loggers would tell police that their coworker Travis had been taken by a UFO, things would go from ordinary to perplexing and completely unbelievable. The Travis Walton UFO incident is one of the most well-known alleged alien abduction cases in history. But was it a hoax? Was it a crime? Or was it a true alien encounter? This is the story of Travis Walton's UFO abduction. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a mystery podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra. If you are new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you are in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would absolutely love it if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends, welcome back. Super happy you're here. I have another wild story for you guys today, and this one is all about aliens. This is a big story. This is a very famous and pretty controversial story in the UFO community. But I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm sure there are still a lot of people out there who aren't even familiar with this story. I did read a book for this case, so that will be down in the show notes, and it's a pretty quick read. It also has 2 other very well-known alien encounters that, who knows, I might do in the future. I hope you guys had an awesome Thanksgiving as well. I have not had Thanksgiving yet. I'm gonna have a very busy Thanksgiving week, so I am recording this early, but me talking to my future self Hope you had a great Thanksgiving as well. Just want to remind everybody to go check out the Patreon. Got lots of bonus content on there, and you always get regular Perplexity episodes early and ad-free. Also, if you haven't done so yet, just want to remind everybody to please, please, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. It really, really helps the show. We are so close to 100 reviews on Spotify and pretty close to very close to 50 reviews on Apple, and I would love to just continue to bump those up. So please go do that if you haven't. If you normally listen on Spotify and maybe you've left a review there, would be awesome if you went over and did it on Apple Podcasts, vice versa, and share the podcast with some of your friends. Trigger warning, as always, for today's episode. This podcast is not for children. Listener discretion is advised, and all the sources that were used for today's episode will be available down in the show notes. So without further ado, let's get into this famous, wild story of Travis Walton's UFO abduction. So Travis Walton at this time had been working for a man named Mike Rogers. Mike had done a lot of contract work for the United States Forest Service for the last 9 years. He and Travis were actually pretty close friends. Travis was also dating Mike's sister, Dana, who he would later get married to. So on this particular day, November 5th, 1971, Travis was returning to an ongoing project near Turkey Springs. His company had been assigned quite some time back to this project. They were supposed to basically be thinning out all of the scrub brush and the undergrowth on this very large stretch of land. There were over 1,200 acres here. So they had a crew that had been working really hard on it, but they were falling behind. This led to them working overtime. So the men would often work these really long hours till as late as 6 o'clock the next morning. Among the group on this project this particular day were Mike and Travis, as well as Steve Pierce, John Goulette, Alan Davis, Ken Peterson, and Dwayne Smith. So the men decided they were all going to ride together in Mike Rogers' truck. I imagine them all cramming inside like sardines. Some of them probably had to jump into the bed of the truck, but it was a group of 7, including Travis. And they were traveling down a forest road after sunset when they would have a crazy experience. They reported they would see a bright light coming from behind the hill ahead of them. And as they got closer, they realized this incredibly bright light was coming from what appeared to be a large silver disc. The disc was around 8 feet tall and 20 feet in diameter. Perplexed, Mike stopped his truck, and everybody's just kind of sitting here staring at this thing, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. But Travis, for whatever reason, gets out of the truck, and he begins walking towards the disc. Mike and the other crew are yelling. They're telling him to stop. They're telling him to come back. But Travis seemed unable to hear them, as if he was in a trance. So Travis gets closer and closer to this disc until he's standing directly underneath it because it's hovering above the ground. Suddenly, the craft began to move erratically from side to side, and it started making a strange sound similar to the sound of a loud turbine. So at this point, Travis seems to snap out of whatever trance he's in as soon as he hears this noise. So he starts backing away in fear. He's starting to head back towards the truck, but it was too late. A beam of greenish-blue light would then shoot out from the craft and struck Travis straight in the chest. Then he was lifted about a foot into the air, with his arms and legs flung back behind him. It was as if he was attached to wires, and then he was suddenly dropped and struck unconscious. So it started to like beam him up, and then it didn't, and he just flung right back down to the ground. So he is unconscious at this point. Very frightened, the men left Travis alone on the forest floor, and they fled to go get help and basically to just try to calm down and figure out what to do next. But after about 10 minutes has passed, the men start to feel guilty, so they decide to turn around and go get Travis. But when the men would return to the same spot, Travis was nowhere to be found. They looked all around and they couldn't find him. So this is when they realize Travis has gone missing. The men end up driving to Heber, Arizona, which I guess was the next nearby main town, and they would phone police at a payphone at around 7:45 p.m. They told the officers that their friend Travis had gone missing, but they didn't make any mention at this time of a UFO because they're worried the police aren't going to do anything. They're not going to take them seriously, which is fair. They just said they were worried something bad had happened to him and they needed the police to come out and help them right away. At this point, it's been about an hour and a half since their shift ended and all of this went down. It was Deputy Sheriff Chuck Ellison that took the men's call. He would end up meeting up with them at a nearby shopping center. Sheriff Ellison could very clearly see that these men were shaken up. Even if their story was crazy, they knew something bad was going on. Their emotions were genuine. Two of the men were so visibly distressed, they were sobbing uncontrollably. Ellison was skeptical, of course, of the men's claims as they began to describe the disc-shaped craft. So they didn't mention it on the phone, but then they start talking about it in person. And there was one thing that Detective Ellison could not deny. These men were genuinely terrified, and they seemed honest in what they believed they had seen. So even if Ellison doesn't believe this, he's like, I believe that y'all believe this happened, which is compelling. So Detective Ellison would inform Sheriff Marlon Gillespie, his superior, who then recommended that the men stay put until an officer could come and interview them. Less than an hour later, the sheriff and Officer Ken Copeland would come out to the area. They interviewed all of the loggers, and Mike Rogers would continue to insist that they should return to the area where Travis had been struck by the craft. He also requested tracking dogs be brought out. The officers didn't have tracking dogs, but they did agree that they would go out to the scene, have a look around, see if they could find any evidence to point to where Travis had gone off to. John Goulette and Steve Pierce, two of the loggers, were so shaken up that they decided it was best for them to return home while all of the other men and the officers went out to the scene. They would also notify friends and family of what had just occurred. So police arrive at the scene and they find absolutely no evidence to corroborate the men's claims or to confirm where Travis could have gone. It was also the dead of winter, so police were worried that Travis could be out in the elements somewhere, so time was of the essence to find him. Police would then inform Mary Walton Collette, Travis's mother, of the incident. Mike Rogers would tell Mary what happened because they were friends, but Mary had a very strange and interesting reaction, to say the least. After Mike told her what happened, she asked him to tell her the same story again. So he did, and then in a very calm tone, Mary asks Mike if anybody else knows what happened aside from the police. And she's saying all of this in front of the officers as well. So the officers take note that this is a strange reaction to hearing that your son has disappeared and has allegedly been abducted by aliens. Detective Copeland in particular takes note of how Mary is behaving. And while Mary had raised six children and had been through her fair share of crazy things, this was certainly a very peculiar response. But perhaps she was just in shock. People react weird under pressure sometimes. After all, she would become more emotional and openly worried as the days of the investigation wore on. At 3 a.m. that day, she also called Dwayne Walton, her other son, and asked him to drive down to help with the search because he lived in another town. So police continue on with their investigation. They're scouring the area, but they would continue to come up empty-handed. Police naturally began to look at the other loggers as potentially having been involved in Travis Walton's disappearance. Sorry, but we have to consider the possibility of foul play here. Could there have been some type of unforeseen accident? Could the men have been doing drugs, partying, and something went wrong? Or could the men have murdered Travis, done something really bad to him? But if that's the case, why would they call the police and insist tracking dogs come up and help find him? On the morning of November 8th, Dwayne Walton and Mike Rogers would show up to the sheriff's office. They were not happy because they had gone out to where Travis had disappeared and unlike previous days, the police weren't there. They had just stopped looking and not notified the family. So they're like, what the hell? You guys have to come back out. We haven't found Travis yet. We have to keep looking. Mike and Dwayne convinced the police to go back out again. And this time they've got the big guns. They have helicopters, jeeps, tracking dogs, and a whole team of volunteers. One skeptic who agreed to help with the search actually showed up with a Geiger counter, which is a machine that measures radiation. Weird to have that if you're a skeptic, but whatever. So he runs the machine over Mike Rogers because he was present for the encounter. He would detect no radiation, so he's all smug and he thinks he's proven the men wrong. But Mike is like, it's been days. I've showered, you know, it would have washed off me by now. So then Mike has an idea. He runs to his truck and he gets his hard hat that he was wearing when the encounter occurred and all of the other men's hard hats. So he grabs them, rushes back over to the man with the Geiger counter, and he rushes it over the hard hats. It starts going off the charts. So these men had clearly been exposed to some type of high level of radiation. And the skeptic was basically pissed and he just stormed off and left, allegedly. By that Saturday, Travis Walton's disappearance would be all over the news. This was kind of a crazy headline. People would naturally gravitate towards it. Man gets taken by UFO. Man disappears. Friend says it was UFO. Fred Sylvanus, a ufologist, would also hear about this, and he would end up interviewing Mike Rogers and Dwayne Walton. Mike would say in his interview, because Travis had disappeared, he would be unable to finish his work contract on time, and he was hoping that the United States Forest Service would be understanding in these unusual and serious circumstances. Dwayne also had some interesting things to share with Fred. Dwayne would explain that he and Travis had been into UFOs their entire lives. They had even made a pact with each other that if one of them were to ever encounter a UFO, they would get as close to it as they possibly could. It's like they were dying to have a close encounter with the third kind. But Dwayne was also certain that aliens were not capable of hurting his brother. He didn't believe that they were dangerous. This interview would seriously taint the reputations and the credibility of these men, and pretty much immediately after, the town of Snowflake and their marshal, Sanford, would publicly say that this was nothing more than an elaborate hoax devised by the Walton brothers. He would chalk this up to fake lights and a release of balloons. Like, basically, the brothers had planned it together and then they fooled the other men. What is it with UFO sightings always being chalked up to a balloon? Police would continue to show up to Mary Walton Kellett's home asking to interview her. Mary would make several strange statements, like the police should stop looking because Travis was not around here. She didn't even think he was on Earth. After Dwayne came home to find Mary in tears after one of her meetings with police, he would tell them that they could only talk to his mother outside on the porch and that she could leave anytime she pleased. This was a very difficult time for her and her family. But police were growing more and more skeptical. Was Mary hiding Travis in her house and that's why she wasn't allowing the police to come inside? Did she know that Travis had faked some type of disappearance and was trying to help him pull it off? On November 10th, the crew would agree to polygraph tests. Now, anybody who follows true crime now, we know that polygraph tests are not accurate. They're bunk science. But these were very common back then, and some people argue still they can give us some valuable information. So take what I say next with a grain of salt and form your own opinions. The polygraph tests were administered by a man named Cy Gibson, employed by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. He asked the men if they had done anything to hurt Travis. He also asked if they knew where his body was located and if they had seen a UFO that day. Alan Dallas, one of the loggers, did not complete his test. He was pretty agitated and he ended up ripping off the equipment before the test was done. But the other five men did complete the test, and they all passed. No deception of any kind was detected on any of their questions. They had all said that they had seen a UFO that day, and they had nothing to do with Travis's disappearance. They had no idea where his body was. The men never once wavered from their story. Additionally, Cy Gibson, the man who gave the men their polygraph test, found them to be believable. Sheriff Gillespie also found the men to be believable. The same day that the men got their polygraphs done, Dwayne Walton also spoke to a man named William H. Spalding of the organization Ground Saucer Watch. Spalding agreed to help the men, and they basically said they would get a doctor to examine Travis if he would return. He also suggested that Dwayne should have Travis have his urine be tested. Part of what's weird about this to me is that if this timeline is correct from the sources I'm reading, that would mean that the men were getting these things organized together. They were planning to have a doctor look at Travis when they didn't even know if he was alive at this point. So, you know, skeptics find this part of the story very strange and orchestrated. At this point, Travis has been missing for 5 days and 6 hours. It's November 10th when Travis Walton reappears. His sister received a phone call from a payphone in Heber, Arizona. It was Travis. They would go pick up Travis, and he was very confused and disoriented. He appeared very disheveled, wearing the clothes that he had worn on the same night he disappeared. And he now had a full beard. He was clean shaven when he had disappeared. He claimed that he woke up along the side of the road. He saw the same craft above his head, and he watched it leave. He eventually realized he was along a highway west of Heber. So he ran to the next town and he found a payphone to call his sister. His brother-in-law Grant would tell his brother Dwayne about this call. But Dwayne and Grant were actually worried that this might be a prank at first, because apparently they had gotten a couple other calls from people pretending to be Travis, which is super messed up. But they also, of course, knew at the end of the day they had to follow up on this call, because if there was any possibility that it was Travis, they had to go get him. So they drove the 33 miles to Heber, and they would find Travis Walton alive. Travis would go on to briefly describe his encounter with these alien entities after he was abducted. He would describe them as being short and bald, with white skin, and their eyes were abnormally large. His description was also noticeably similar to Betty and Barney Hills, a couple who famously claimed to have encountered a UFO and extraterrestrials in 1961.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Travis also seemed genuinely shocked to hear that he hadn't been missing for a few hours. He had lost time. He had no idea that he had been missing for 5 days. So when his family is like, touch your face, and he feels a full beard, he's shocked. Travis was also taken as promised to see a doctor thanks to Spalding. Lester Steward was the doctor that would examine Travis, but he was not a medical doctor. He was actually a hypnotherapist. His family was pretty pissed off about this. They wanted a medical doctor. So they spent about 45 minutes with Dr. Steward, according to them. Those Steward documents, they were there over 2 hours. And Dwayne Walton, Travis's brother, felt the visit was a complete waste of time. In fact, when Dr. Steward would call later, Dwayne would tell him to never bother their family again. Eventually, it was arranged for Travis to meet with 2 actual medical doctors, though one was a pediatrician, which I thought is a little strange. But this was with the help of another person, Coral Lorenzen from the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, or APRO, a UFO research group. Travis would be examined by a general practitioner named Dr. Jovis Saltz, and then the pediatrician named Dr. Howard Candle. And this whole thing is a little bit strange to me. I don't know if maybe the men didn't have a lot of money, and so that's why they were having these groups help them go see a doctor. Like, I don't understand why they didn't just go straight to the hospital and have them run a bunch of tests and just be like, hey, my brother's been missing for 5 days. Like, just go see whatever medical doctor at your local hospital. You know what I mean? Like, if anybody knows down in the comments, let me know, because I know this is a pretty well-known story, but this is something I couldn't really find answers on. Why did they feel the need to set it up with specific doctors? Because that's another thing that just makes me naturally skeptical about this story. The National Enquirer got word of this, and they did call Coral Lorenzen and promised to finance their investigation in exchange for access to the Waltons. And Lorenzen would agree to this, so this would, of course, further complicate everything about this story and its viability. Walton's medical exam found that he was in good health generally, but he had lost a significant amount of weight. He lost about 10 pounds over the course of his 5 days where he was missing. He also had a very small red spot on his right elbow that allegedly could have been left by a hypodermic needle, but a lot of the sources I read just call it a red spot, a little red mark. He also had a distinct lack of ketones in his urine. If he hadn't had any food for 5 days, his body would have began breaking down fats to survive, and the ketones in his blood would have risen, which would cause him to go into ketosis. But this was not the case. So this would basically prove that for the 5 days that Travis Walton was missing, he had been nourished in some way. So there've been a couple sources that allege, if this was a true alien abduction, that he could have been nourished through like the hypodermic needle in some way. But like, the mark was on his elbow. I've never heard of being nourished through your elbow. I mean, I'm not an alien, but just seems weird. So at this point, we are going to get to Travis Walton's side of the story. He would later describe his recollection of events in detail, saying he had been initially knocked unconscious by that greenish-blue light coming from the disc. But he would eventually come to. He was in a significant amount of pain when he woke up. He was also having difficulty breathing. He was reclined in what appeared to be a hospital room. So at first he wakes up and he just thinks he's been in some type of work accident and he's been taken to the hospital. But the next thing he notices is he is surrounded by 3 tiny beings in orange jumpsuits standing under 5 feet tall. The beings were bald and had large dark eyes with small mouths and noses. Their skin also was very pale, an unnatural white color. The beings resembled large fetuses. And Travis was so terrified, he initially grabbed the closest thing to him, which was like some type of glass vase, and he tried to break it and make it into a weapon. But he realized the vase wouldn't smash. So he continued to just hold this vase-like object in his hands, and he's just kind of waving it around crazy because he wants these beings to back up and get away from him. And they did. They actually put their arms up and slowly backed out of the room just to basically indicate, like, hey, man, we're not here to do any harm. It's all good. we'll give you some space. So then Travis throws himself out of this hospital bed or whatever this thing is that he's reclined to, and he enters a larger room with a high-backed chair sitting in the middle of it. As he moved towards the chair, lights in the room seemed to automatically turn on. He sat in the center chair, and he said that the lights eventually came into focus. It appeared to him that he was sitting in some sort of planetarium. It was like a star map was being projected above him. He then noticed a lever next to the chair, and he pulled it. This would make the lights move around him. So it's not clear if this is some type of pretend star map or if he was actually looking at outer space. When he got up from his chair, the lights disappeared. And then he heard a noise from behind him. So he turns around, and this time he sees a tall, human-like figure with blonde hair and abnormally large golden eyes. He had blue coveralls and a glass helmet on. Travis tried to ask the man questions, but he had no response. Instead, he just motioned for Travis to follow him. So Travis follows this being into another room. It looked like an aircraft hangar. Three more human-like beings were standing there. Two men and one woman. They were similar in appearance to the first man, but they were not wearing glass helmets. They were similar to other accounts of Nordic aliens, which are basically aliens that have human-like features. They're often described with lighter features, light hair, piercing blue eyes, things like that. So the woman moved towards Travis, and she put what appeared to be an oxygen mask over Travis's face. This seemed to knock Travis out, and when he woke up, he was back on Earth. Sheriff Gillespie would conclude Travis Walton had likely been assaulted and drugged, and that is what led to this story. But the doctors that assessed Travis found no drugs in his system and no signs of head trauma. Travis Walton would also later sell his story to the tabloid The National Enquirer, which published his account and awarded the loggers a $5,000 prize. In 1978, Travis Walton wrote a book. He called it The Walton Experience, and it was later adapted into the very famous 1993 film Fire in the Sky. So obviously there's a lot of controversy in this story, but one of the big things that continues to get me is Travis Walton would go on to take numerous polygraph tests. He did all these hypnotherapy sessions for years, and people could never prove he was lying. His story never changed. Now, he did fail his first polygraph test. He passed the others, but again, in my opinion, polygraphs don't hold a lot of weight. And based on the recent research with them, science feels the same way. But it would be pretty insane to tell this story for the rest of your life and never once waver from it. Travis would later marry Dana, his girlfriend, who was Mike Rogers' sister. They would have children together. And he also became the foreman of a lumber mill in Snowflake. From what I can find, Travis Walton is still alive to this day, and he continues to defend himself from accusations of fraud. He has maintained his story for decades. He also feels that the aliens did not mean to hurt him. He believes they hit him with that light on accident. Travis has also given numerous talks on the subject of alien abductions since his experience, and he has been found to be believable by many ufologists worldwide.
What do you remember from that moment on?
When I regained consciousness, it wasn't real quick. It wasn't real woken right up. It was real slow. It was dim. My consciousness was kind of like in and out for a while. I didn't know where I was. The pain and the feeling that I was mortally wounded, something was so wrong inside. I felt like I was dying. And this is what really fueled the panic when I finally laid eyes on these creatures. Of course, you know, all of the mental programming that we get from Hollywood that aliens are invading monsters, you know, didn't help. But I instantly associated this feeling of dying with pain with them. So I was combative immediately.
Where were you?
I was lying on my back on a raised table. There was a light above me, just a soft glow. I lashed out at them. The one closest to me, I I felt really weak. I didn't have enough strength to do much. So when my arm contacted him, he just fell back very unexpectedly easy into the other one. And I rolled off the table in the other direction. They came around the table, and the three of them were coming towards me. And I just grabbed something from behind me, an object off of the shelf there, and started swinging it at them.
What was the object?
It was just some large, long cylinder or rod, glass, some clear material. I wasn't studying it. I was looking at them and swinging wildly, screaming threats. They stopped, and I was planning on attacking more fully, just making way past them. The only doorway I could see was on the other side of them.
And it looked like a doorway?
Yeah, it looked like a doorway.
What did they look like?
I guess it's a pretty typical description nowadays. Very large eyes, hairless, two eyes, nose, mouth. I didn't see them speak or no change in the expressions. To me, that in the face of all the screaming and the fear that I was projecting, their lack of reaction probably just added to my panic. But
did they feel like they were a living creature, or did they feel like they were a robot? Like,
well, they were without expression, I'll say that. But, you know, I've had 45 years to think about that. In more recent years, I think, well, maybe if they're telepathic and it's developed enough to where they don't need to talk, they also don't need facial expression.
Right.
And so their ability to communicate with each other would be much richer and more complete than we have. And speech and frowns or smiles or whatever would become obsolete.
Did their musculature, did they look like smooth, like they had no clear muscles?
Yeah, they were pretty smooth, very light. When I hit the one, it fell back into the other one pretty easily, like he weighed hardly anything.
Like a little kid?
Yeah. That was the most terrifying experience of my life. But when I tell this story and try to relate to people, I'm trying to communicate what I experienced and how utterly, utterly traumatic that was and how it was so devastating. I was, you know, on the verge of catatonic for weeks after it happened. But I don't want to relate this story in order to inspire fear, because I've had enough time to think about it that I think that it was unwarranted, that my reaction was just due to my ignorance of the situation. The fact that I was returned at all is pretty significant, you know?
Yeah.
The idea that these beings are just kidnapping people willy-nilly and doing terrible things to them, I don't subscribe to that theory.
Had you heard of the Betty and Barney Hill story before you were abducted?
I probably had.
Hey everybody, this is Kadra. Wanted to hop on really quickly and let you all know that through December 27th for Christmas, I am running a sale on Patreon. You can get 50% off your first month. That applies for any of my tiers. 50% off the $1 tier, $3, $5, or $10. If you use the code 531BA at checkout, you get your first month half off. That is 531BA. You can get more than 50 pieces of bonus content if you join at the $3 or above tier. Or if you just want early and ad-free episodes, check out the $1 tier. We have a lot of fun over on the Perplexed Society, and there are lots of perks. So go check that out if that interests you. Patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Sale runs through December 27th. Merry Christmas! Bye. Many people, like I mentioned earlier, see this story as nothing more than a hoax. Critics have pointed out potential motives for fabricating the story, such as avoiding financial penalties for failing to complete their forestry contract on time. They were running behind on that project. Several pieces of evidence and arguments have been presented to support the claim that the Travis Walton incident is a hoax. So let's get into some of those now. First one would be financial motive. Science writers Philip J. Klass and Michael Shermer have suggested that the incident could have been staged to avoid financial penalties from the Forestry Service. The crew was significantly behind on schedule with their federal contract, and an act of God, like an alien abduction, could have provided a legal excuse to then break their contract without any penalty. They were under a lot of stress. They had been working very long hours. Walton also sold his story to the tabloid, The National Enquirer, and him and the other men got, be it small, but they got a cash prize of $5,000 to split. So financial motive has been one of the theories, and I would kind of couple that with attention, wanting to be in the media, getting a movie made about his story, that kind of thing. Another big argument that contributes to this being a hoax is just the inconsistencies and the lack of physical evidence to prove that anything did happen to Travis. Critics like Philip Klass have pointed out the lack of physical evidence to support their claims. Travis was examined by doctors, and aside from the teeny tiny little minuscule mark on his elbow, there were no other markings on him. There were no burns on the forest floor. No eyewitnesses outside of the group of loggers. So these findings could arguably contradict the story of a violent encounter with a UFO. Additionally, Travis Walton's mother had a very strange initial reaction to his disappearance. This has led skeptics to believe this could have been orchestrated in some way by the family. Another big part of the hoax argument is the polygraph tests. Travis Walton failed a lie detector test shortly after the incident, although he did pass the subsequent tests. The initial failure has been cited as evidence of deception, though some argue it could have been due to him being under a lot of stress in the situation. Another argument is witness recantation and reinstatement. In 2021, Mike Rogers, a key witness and Walton's brother-in-law, temporarily retracted his support for Travis Walton's story. He actually at one point called the incident staged. He later reinstated his support and retracted what he said, but this of course only added to the skepticism surrounding Travis Walton's story. Another thing is that Travis and his brother had a long-standing interest in UFOs. Walton had a history of discussing the possibility of him being abducted. He talked about this a lot after watching the film The UFO Incident, which is a movie about the alleged abduction of Barney and Betty Hill. After the broadcast, Walton reportedly discussed the possibility of being taken aboard a flying saucer. Walton, his older brother Dwayne, and his mother were described by the sheriff as, quote, longtime students of UFOs. And remember, the physical description that Travis Walton gave of these aliens was the same physical description, or similar description to Betty and Barney Hills. And then, like I said, there's that attention-seeking theory with, like, the media. This story got a lot of media coverage. For individuals interested in UFOs, staging such an event could have been a way to gain notoriety in UFO circles. But what I can't get over is why these men would subject themselves to endless heckling and controversy. Steve Pierce, one of the men that was there that night, actually was left by his wife because she could not deal with the ridicule from their community anymore. She started begging Steve to, quote, admit it wasn't true, and he continued to insist that it was. He also ended up changing his name, he moved, and he didn't come forward and start talking about the Travis Walton incident until more recently, when a documentary team reached out to him. He continues to be highly affected to this day. Also, this area is actually quite well known for having a lot of UFO sightings. And we can't forget the Geiger counter, which found the men's hard hats had very high levels of radiation. So, the big question, do you choose to believe the Travis Walton UFO abduction or not. Despite all of the controversy, this story remains one of the most famous alien abductions. Travis Walton has continued to share his story through books, interviews, and documentaries. He has never once changed his story, and the case has been the subject of numerous investigations and debates within the UFO community and beyond, but has never been able to be debunked. And whatever the case, the story of Travis Walton's abduction is certainly perplexing. So that, everybody, is the story of Travis Walton. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. If you did, be sure to let me know. Drop a comment down below if you're watching on YouTube, or drop a comment on this exact episode if you're listening on Spotify. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, the notification button, give this video a like. If you're listening on a podcast platform, hit the follow button. We have new episodes coming out every Wednesday. And if you haven't done so yet, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. It really helps the show. I also would love to hear from you guys. If you have had a UFO encounter, I want to hear about it. You can always send your stories and your topic requests to me at perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. You all are amazing. Hope you have a great week and stay safe. Don't get abducted by a UFO, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brannon. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to support. Have a topic request or a perplexing story of your own you'd like to share? Send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show further and unlock exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Perplexity merch and additional support links can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.